Roll down tide.
From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, this is the Beer Garden presented by Oxford Crystal.
I'd like to hear a little bit more conviction in your take, though. There was a lot of maybes, a lot of what ifs, a lot of questions. You need to just get on here. You need to fire and put me in a position where I have to tell you that you're wrong.
And now, here's your host, Neil McCready.
Nice. Nice.
Welcome into another edition of The Beer Garden, presented by Oxford Crystal. I'm Neil McCready. Today on the show, 35 minutes or so of NFL draft preview, a lot of Ole Miss talk. We talk about Kyler Murray, some other things. My guest today, John Ledyard, the senior NFL draft analyst of Draft Network. He is the co-host of the Locked On NFL Draft podcast. It's really good stuff. You're going to love it. He absolutely knows his NFL stuff. We'll get to that in a minute. First, let me tell you, this podcast is brought to you by the Oxford Crystal, Highway 6 West in Oxford, just next door to the Oxford Exxon. You can get 10 crystals for $6 this weekend at the Oxford Crystal, or you can pick five for $5.55. Any five, whether that's a crystal chick, a crystal, a pup, a dog, whatever it may be. They've got it there. They've also got the breakfast, the three-egg plate combo featuring the Gold Peak coffee and fresh cracked eggs. All of that there at the Oxford Crystal. And as always, the $2 square meal, the $3 square meal, the $4 square meal, all at the Oxford Crystal, Highway 6 West in Oxford. I'm coming to you from the Clark Ford Studios. Clark Ford is in Amory, 662-257-1900. Call that number. Ask for Corey Clark. Tell Corey what new Ford you're looking for, and then send him an email. He'll send you a quote. I'm sorry. You ask for a quote. He'll send you a quote within 15 minutes in business hours. He might do it by email is what I meant to say. And then the rest is up to you. You get your quote. You can shop it around, or you can get your quote and go ahead and do what I've done and what so many others have done, and that's let Corey take the hassle out of the everyday car buying experience. 662-257-1900. And at the end of your deal, tell Corey you heard about Clark Ford on The Beer Garden or on any of our family of podcasts, and you'll save $500. We're also coming to you in part because of LB's Meat Market. It's on 2008 University Avenue in Oxford, 662-259-2999. Get in touch with Greg Jones. Let Greg know what you're looking for. He'll have it ready for you, or you can do what I like to do, which is go in and just sort of shop around a little bit. It's the freshest cuts in Oxford, whether it's the bone-in ribeye, the filet, their different chicken, the pork, whatever it may be. Their sausages are fantastic. They've now added the lamb sausage, which is remarkably good. They've added that a spicy and a non-spicy version there at LB's. So go in, try some of their sausages, use them as an appetizer, use them as a meal, and then grab some of their fresh cuts. You can't go wrong. LB's Meat Market in Oxford, 662-259-2999. We're also coming to you as sponsored by Community Mortgage. It's located in Oxford, Memphis, DeSoto County, and Chattanooga. It's 30 years old this year. It's one of the oldest mortgage companies in the Southeast. All the underwriting and the processing is done in Memphis, so you're getting local underwriting that understands your market. It's the leader in the condo financing market, condo financing in the Oxford market. So get in touch with Jason Lowe and ask about Community Mortgage's float down option, which allows you to lock in the current rate, but if rates go down before you close, you get the lower rate. It's JLOWE, J-L-O-W-E, at communitymtg.com. And we're brought to you by SPM, Strategic Partners in Media. It's a full-service advertising agency that works with businesses of all types, big or small, Fortune 500 companies to startups. SPM can help your advertising needs for TV, print, radio, and every facet of social and digital media. Look, here's why SPM is really good and different from other ad firms. They handle everything in-house. They don't sub their workout. The writing, the production, and the editing is done solely by their staff and crafted uniquely for their clients. Lastly, an Ole Miss grad and a Mississippian is a partner in the firm, so give them a call and see how great they are. It's Austin at strategicpartnersmedia.com. Austin at strategicpartnersmedia.com. Now let's go to the Patterson and Earhart hotline. Patterson and Earhart, attorneys at law. They specialize in personal injury law and real estate law, but theirs is a general practice that can handle any of your legal needs. When you contact Patterson and Earhart, you speak to one of the partners in the firm. That's who handles your case, not some paralegal at a faceless corporate firm. Give them a call, 662-526-1992, or check out their website, pelaws.com. Your initial consultation is free. Now here's John Ledyard on the NFL and the NFL draft. John, really appreciate you taking some time with us tonight here on the podcast. Thanks so much for your time and what I know is a busy time of the year.
Well, absolutely. Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Obviously, Ole Miss had a bunch of guys at the combine. It's a potentially a really big draft for the kids that at Ole Miss. A lot of the kids that are leaving early, and then a bunch of the seniors. Nine guys at the combine, I think. I might have that number wrong. It was amazing how big of a number it was, considering how bad the program was the last couple of years. The story, at least in my opinion, that the biggest story that came out of there was DK Metcalf, who made, I think, probably every other man in the world feel sort of inferior with some of the photos that he had taken. And then he bust out the 4.33. What did he do in terms of his draft stock at the combine? Where was his stock coming in, and where do you think it is leaving Indianapolis?
Well, I think teams see a guy like that, and they really want to believe right away. So when you put up numbers like he did in the athletic testing, it really helps them buy in. I mean, I think teams have been super interested, but honestly, the two biggest things he did, I think, were the medicals. It sounds like he passed those with flying colors, and there's no concerns there. And just who he is as a person, I mean, he's just a really impressive dude, to be honest. Like, he's just kind of a grounded guy and works his tail off and all about football and, you know, is going to put in the time needed to be the best. And you're just kind of one of those types that teams are really going to feel good about, because he isn't all the way there. He's not a finished product. So teams are going to look at him and they're going to say, okay, he's not finished yet, but here's the guy who's going to put in all the work we need him to get to kind of where he needs to be. Coming from a super simple offense at Ole Miss where he was only asked to run like three routes, and they're going to understand that, and they're going to say, we can work with everything he offers to make him better as an all-around player. So I think that's the biggest thing that he did. Then, of course, when you're running 4.33 at 230 pounds and almost 6'4", you know, that's going to impress teams as well. So, yeah, he's a freak. There's no doubt about it. Like, clearly the best receiver in the draft, in my opinion. And I think the ceiling is sky high with him. And it wouldn't surprise me if he's a top 10, maybe even a top 5 pick.
You touched on a couple of things that I've got to ask you about, because I've read your work, and your work is fantastic. I'm going to push people towards it because it's really good stuff, not just about the draft, but football in general. You talk about what a simple offense it was in terms of, you know, pass routes and stuff. Ole Miss literally had a route that was called Get Open, which I don't know if you ran that back when you were in the sixth grade in the backyard, but most of us did. It's hard to believe that ran in the SEC. What is the perception of what that offense was the last year or so among NFL types, and how much, if at all, does that, you know, impact guys like DK Metcalf and A.J. Brown and DeMarcus Lloyd and Dawson Knox?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's to some degree, it probably is more like, here's what we have to evaluate them on, and it isn't much, especially for a guy like Knox. You know, there just isn't a whole lot there, you know, to look at. So I think teams are really looking forward to him finishing athletic testing at his pro day, but also what he did at the combine was pretty impressive. So I think all that matters a lot for him. Still, it's a lot for teams to kind of risk for a guy in his situation. But, yeah, the offense is super simple. You know, the outside receivers basically operate on a vertical plane, you know, comebacks and curls and nine routes, and that's pretty much it. They just kind of operate in that space. And then, obviously, A.J. Brown had more freedom and could kind of do what he wanted, was the focal point of the offense. And so I think that when you take all that into consideration, as NFL teams, you're just kind of saying, okay, well, can Lodge and Metcalf become – more well-rounded route runners. And I think there's no question that they can. I think Lodge, you know, he was there a little bit longer, a little more versatility. Occasionally it would have him vary up his route tree a little bit, reduce his split, things like that. But Metcalf was pretty much always on the left side of the line of scrimmage, always outside the numbers, always working a vertical pattern. And so there was just so little flexibility with what he did. In the NFL, that's going to change so much. And I think one of the things that those guys have to look forward to is that the route tree was so predictable on tape that it made it really easy for corners. They almost never had to worry about an in-breaking route. I mean, you know how simple that makes life for a corner. So I think they were even easier to cover in college because of that. Yet they still put up really good production and numbers and highlight real plays. So I think in the NFL level, it's going to be a lot tougher to handle those guys 1v1. They're going to have way more versatility. They're going to be asked to do way more as route runners. And I think that the amazing physical tools that a guy like Metcalf has are really going to be able to shine in a variety of ways. So it's definitely exciting in terms of what those guys can be. Brown is the one who probably will translate most easily to the NFL, but at the same time, he's kind of a big slot that didn't face press coverage much because of the way they used him. So he's a little bit of a rejection in that role in terms of converting to the NFL if a team does want him to play outside. So there's something to look at for all of them, coming from an offense that unique and that simple where they only ran 20, 25 plays. But I do think that at the end of the day, the NFL is going to look at the traits, the ball skills from a lot of those guys, the route running ability of a guy like Brown, you know, the athletic upside of guys like Knox and Metcalf, and they're going to choose to bet on that sooner in the draft rather than later.
You may have just answered this. I'm just going to clarify because I'm curious. Those of us who covered Ole Miss the last couple of years kind of wondered with DK Metcalf and A.J. Brown, do they fit in any NFL offense, or do they need to go to a specific type of franchise that runs a specific type of offense? In other words, does DK's whole package, does it translate to almost any NFL team, or does he need to go to the right kind of fit where the people would utilize him in a way that maximizes his skill set and maybe minimizes some of the negatives in his game?
I would say if an NFL team can't fit Metcalf into their system, they probably need to change their system. But at the same time, you are right in a way, because there are pretty West Coast heavy systems out there, and he really wouldn't be a great fit for stuff like that. Now, most of those offenses have evolved to a degree where they're still challenging teams down the field. There are obviously a few exceptions here and there, but he's obviously going to be at his best as a vertical receiver, you know, a guy who catches the ball down the field, who can stretch the field with speed. That's going to be make you win the ball in the air. That's going to be Metcalf's bread and butter. That'll also probably be Lodge's bread and butter in the NFL. So, I mean, I think that there are offenses that are preferable, maybe, or roles that are preferable for them. You know, Brown is a big slot receiver, so I think his role may need to be clearly defined, but he should be able to fit into every offense. If he's going to play outside for a team, he certainly has the size and speed to be able to do it, but he is not very nuanced at getting off press coverage because he hardly ever saw press coverage. So I do think there will be maybe a little bit of a learning curve with A.J. Brown in the NFL that people don't really predict right now because he is such a good route runner from the slot. So it will depend a little bit on how a team uses him. But generally speaking, I think they should fit, all three guys should fit pretty easily into whatever offense they end up on. It's just going to be kind of the role within that offense that they're asked to fill right away and how that role kind of evolves over time.
So you've got DK Metcalf projected as a top 10 guy, maybe even a top 5 guy. Where, if the draft were held today, where do you think A.J. Brown and DeMarcus Lodge would go?
My guess would be that Brown goes somewhere in the second half of the first round. I think maybe even in the 20s somewhere. You could see him falling into the early second round, but probably not after the combine. I think he could easily be the second receiver off the board. My guess is it'll be he or N'Keal Harry or Hakeem Butler. One of those three will be the next receiver off the board after Metcalf. With Lodge, probably going to see a day three guy, but just because he didn't test that great, and I know teams are already worried a little bit about his play strength and things like that, but he is such an interesting study on tape because, to be honest, I kind of like Lodge's tape a little bit more than Brown's in some ways, because Brown did just a lot of simple stuff. He's good after the catch, but there aren't many tough – like Brown doesn't make him a lot of contested catches or high point grabs, or I mean, he just gets force-fed the ball underneath a lot. So a lot of his plays aren't that impressive on tape, but his traits are better than Lodge's. So, you know, Brown's size and speed and that kind of stuff, you know, you bank on that more than you bank on Lodge's traits succeeding at the NFL level. So now I do have Brown – over Lodge after the combine in my rankings. But I really think Lodge is kind of Brandon Lloyd-esque in that he makes a lot of plays in the air. He's kind of acrobatic. Like if you took Lodge's 10 best catches from this past season, you would think he was like the number one receiver in the draft if you watched him. But then he also lets some opportunities slip by him too. He'll drop some passes as well. And he doesn't have great speed, although he does know how to get on top of corners. Very nuanced in his footwork and his releases. He's flashed the ability to be a good route runner. Was kind of banged up during the Shrine Week. I was hoping he'd be like the best. He was my top ranked player there going into the event. I was really hoping he'd kind of steal the show. He didn't really do that. I think there's he has really good tape, to be honest. You know, I think that there's clearly a role for him in the NFL, but the athleticism, will it be able to check out at the NFL level? I think that's the big question mark right now with him. So I do think Lodge will probably be a day three pick. I like him sometime in the third round personally, but I believe the NFL will value him a little bit later. Maybe round four. I could see him sliding into round four. Knox, I would think, will go at the end of the top 100, at the end of day two, just because of his athletic upside and then the flashes that he had. But his pro day will be big. Teams will want to see how he performs there. This is a really good tight end class, and he got 22 targets last year and 15 catches. So you're really putting your faith in what he can be if you're taking him that high. But his traits are intriguing. He is a team-first guy all the way, high character, high work, great work ethic. He's going to do everything he can to be a strong contributor in the NFL. So I think a team's going to feel really safe about that part. He just needs to develop further, I think, from where he's at now. And he certainly has the traits to do that. So I would definitely take Knox within the top 100 as well.
And then there's Greg Little, who replaced Laramie Tunsil at Ole Miss, walked right in as a true freshman, replaced Tunsil, started for three seasons. It's kind of unfair here, John, as you can imagine. People would compare him to Tunsil, which, I mean, Tunsil was an elite, ultra-elite college left tackle. And so sometimes people would say, well, you know, Little's not as good as Tunsil. And I would say, well, not many people are at the college level. When you look at Greg Little, what do you see and kind of how do you project him at the next level?
Yeah, he's not anywhere close to Tunsil for sure, but you know, like you said, not many are. I think, you know, obviously there are some movement skills that are enticing for a tackle there. I know he didn't test really well, but the biggest thing with Little is there's no consistency. Like his footwork's different every time he pass sets. He just kind of is out there moving around. He's just a five-star recruit moving around. You know, there's very little technique. There's very little nuance to his footwork. He doesn't really, even when he varies his sets, the footwork is so inconsistent that he doesn't really reach his set points the way that he should. He honestly made it work for himself in the SEC, which is commendable. He may be a really non-traditional tackle and still find some level of success in the NFL because he really didn't give up a ton of sacks or pressures, but it just looked so bad all the time. He just wondered if his process was going to bite him in the butt in the NFL. And so that'll be the big question with him. You know, he certainly doesn't do many things in a traditional sense, yet he's made it work for him at a pretty good level of football. I do think they gave him some help in certain matchups. I think that, you know, even like an Alabama game, like they didn't really come after him, and I really wanted to see teams really attack him a little bit more. You know, Auburn might have been his worst game, and they don't even have great pass rushers. So you know, he just kind of had an odd seat. Like when you watched him on tape, you expected him to kind of give up pressure a lot more than he did, and he kind of found a way to make his style of play work. But in the NFL, that is just really difficult to do. I think technique is so, so important. The level of pass rusher, I mean, defensive line and edge rushers are probably the deepest position groups in the NFL. So life is really, really difficult on offensive linemen, and technique matters so much. And right now he just isn't very technical. So he needs a lot of coaching, I think. I think he'll need a lot of development before he's ready to play. I will say this, he's sharp from the neck up, I think. You know, he plays pretty sharp. He picks up twists and blitz and things like that, and he's not out of position very often. So I think that will help him be able to pick some things up quicker once he gets a much better level of coaching than what he's had so far.
I'll stay on the offensive side since we've been talking about that since you started with me. I guess I'll start on the offensive line. Javon Patterson was there. He was a kid that, you know, I've covered since I guess he was coming out of high school, and he came to Ole Miss, had a really solid career, kind of got overlooked at times in large part because Ole Miss wasn't particularly good in the tail end of his career. He's a guy that I've talked to some NFL scouts before who think, you know, he could have a career as an offensive guard. What have you seen from him? What did you see from the combine that in terms of his projectability?
Yeah, he is a guy that improved a lot. That's really most of what I know about him. I've seen a little bit of him on tape, and I think that he's going to be kind of a low ceiling type of guy, but might have, if he keeps improving his technique, he might have enough kick technique to stick somewhere as like a spot starter type of guy. But yeah, got a lot better. I think some scouts were saying he was one of the most improved players in the country. I didn't watch much of his junior year tape, but I think they were saying he was one of the more improved players in the country from his junior to his senior year. Really put himself on the radar. So, I mean, probably a day three pick at best for him. But I do think the tape is much, much better, or at least it looked like it was very good this season, I thought, and better than years past compared to when you refer to people who've scouted more of him previously in his career. But I think the big thing for him is just continue to get better technically, because he's never going to be like the most athletic guard or anything like that. But if he can continue to improve technically, I know that he has the desire and the want to and the effort, and teams will like that. I think that just for him, it's just going to be about the little things, all the details. You know, if he can master those things, he gives himself a shot, because you look at him and you think, you know, not a guy with a very high ceiling, you know, even if he puts it all together. But there have been guys that are less talented than him that make it work in the NFL. So that just because of technique and effort and character and work ethic and smarts and stuff like that. So that's probably his best path, but he seems like he's on his way to that path based on this past season.
Is there any chance Jordan Tamu has an NFL career? Does he have the NFL arm? Does he have the arm skill to make it happen in that league?
Yes, he does. He does. He is actually one of my favorite sleeper players in the draft, to be honest. I mean, day three guy for sure, but you know, I thought he was really good at Shrine. I didn't really get to see much of. I know he was with the throwing quarterbacks at the combine, but I didn't really get to pay attention much to his performance there. But yeah, there's traits there. There's athleticism there. You know, he came in bigger than I thought he would. You know, I think heavier than I thought he would, which teams will like. He's just quiet. He's just a quiet kid. I don't know whether the teams are going to see that as bad or good or what. You know, they tend to like rah-rah guys typically. He is absolutely not that guy, but he is very much lead by example. Super smart. I mean, Dawson Knox, when he was on our show, he just raved about how Jordan Tamu's work ethic and the time that he puts in to the game and how badly he wants to be good. But, yeah, he's got a very military-like personality. So
yeah.
I think teams will love the work ethic for a backup guy. They'll love the athleticism dimension that he adds as a backup guy. I think he does have enough traits to make it. I very much think he will make a roster. The question is how much can he ascend at the NFL level? I don't think physically he's going to have any his big issues. His biggest issue is going to be mental, because if you ever read about Phil Longo's offense, or if you ever read about what Phil Longo kind of desires for his quarterback, he takes the mental burden off of the quarterbacks in a lot of ways. He gives them so few plays, and they don't really even do reads. A lot of the receivers do the reads. So there's just so much development for Tiamu mentally to be able to handle an NFL offense, and not just necessarily to be able to draw it up on the whiteboard. I think he can get to that point, but can you make it habit for yourself when you're on the field? Like, can it be second nature to you to move through progressions and to be able to do things at an NFL level as a quarterback and handle NFL reads, you know, and looks pre-snap, you know where the safeties are? That's my big concern with Tiamu, is that he makes a lot of silly mistakes because they didn't push him mentally at Ole Miss very much. Now, like I said, I heard he's a sharp kid and everything like that. So I think there's a ceiling there that's untapped a little bit, but he comes from about the simplest college offense you can get. And so I think that the leap will be significant to the NFL, which is why an early impact is really probably off the table. But down the road, I think, yeah, I think that he can become better and be a solid backup in the NFL and maybe even a spot starter here or there.
It's a hell of an indictment of Phil Longo, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, he's terrible. they're very happy that he is gone now. I mean, that's offense, you know, I mean, even we had Dawson Knox on the podcast, and, you know, he's classy guy as it gets. And he didn't want to say anything. You could tell, but I mean, yeah, but I mean, he said he was frustrated. He wished the offense would have allowed him to do more to help the team win. He felt like he offered a skill set that wasn't, you know, fully taken advantage of. And, you know, he even admitted, he said, we put up a lot of numbers, you know, everything. But when the level of competition got better, you know, it seemed like people figured us out pretty quickly. And I mean, that's expressed on all circles. I mean, you hear that all the time. And yeah, I mean, it limited the players that they had significantly. I mean, they're going to have, they're going to have, you know, like you said, nine players. They're going to have a ton of players drafted. They're going to have two receivers drafted in the first round. You know, they could have Greg Little as a tackle drafted in the first round as well. They have draftable talent all over their offense. Their defense has a safety running 4.29 who didn't do a thing in his career at Ole Miss. You know, no one expected that number except for people at Ole Miss who watched him run because they didn't do anything. They have tons. I mean, they have talent on that defense right now, and it just hasn't developed. You know, that's the thing. You know, I mean, I think the culture at Ole Miss, absolutely, like in terms of the brotherhood and stuff like that, like I commend that kind of stuff. I think it's huge for an organization who's gone what they've gone through with the, you know, the sanctions and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I think they need that kind of stuff. And that's something Matt Luke's done a really good job of putting in place. But the reality at the end of the day is they couldn't out-scheme anyone. And when they faced LSU and Alabama, yeah, Greedy Williams shut down DK Metcalf because he knew where Metcalf was going to run on every single play. You know, the smart defensive minds, Nick Saban, Dave Aranda, those kind of guys, they knew exactly what Ole Miss was going to do the entire game. So Jordan Chalmers' stat lines are terrible from those games. He had no shot. There was no chance. They knew every single play they were going to run. The guys on that team know it. The ones who were sharp enough, you know, they know that it limited what they could do. And so it made it very difficult for them to be competitive despite the talent level they had. It made it very difficult for them to be competitive against top tier teams. And I think that was probably the most frustrating part for NFL evaluators because they wanted to see those guys in a scheme that asked them to do more and asked them to be a little more diverse, and they just didn't get to see that. And I think if they had, for a couple of years, those guys had been able to work in a more productive scheme, you wouldn't have production questions with DK Metcalf and things like that, or with Dawson Knox. So, you know, there are advantages and disadvantages for certain guys. It certainly helped AJ Brown stock, you know, kind of skyrocket and helped him get a ton of targets and a ton of production on tape. And so he's able to put forth a pretty good statistical, you know, production profile. But for guys like Dawson Knox, you know, there are aspects of his evaluation I can't even fill out. I don't know what he does in contested catch situations. He doesn't get targeted in them, so it's hard for me to even answer that. You know, and I think that's the frustrating part for NFL teams. There's no way to kind of know what a player like that can be because he isn't put in situations to be that way. And that's the part that really will grind the gears of NFL teams and even draft evaluators like myself in the media realm, because that offense just didn't give players the chance to be all that they could be.
It's fascinating stuff. Real quick, I know because people are going to want to know, how do they listen to that podcast, not only the one with Dawson, but your NFL podcast in general?
Yeah, so I do my co-host with my co-host Trevor Sikkema, the Locked On NFL Draft podcast, 5 days a week. We had Dawson on a couple weeks ago, I want to say, maybe 2 weeks ago. You can scroll back through and kind of find it, but because we do five a week. So, but yeah, you can listen to Locked On NFL Draft podcast on iTunes or any of those spots that people usually listen to the podcast.
You referenced John Zedrick Woods, who, look, I knew he was fast. I covered him for 4 years, and if you'd put a gun to my head and said, what will he run in the 40, I would have guessed somewhere between 4.4 and 4.45. I knew he could really run. I didn't see a 4.29 coming. Good for Zed. I mean, it obviously turned the heads of NFL people. You're around those kind of people. How much did it turn their heads? What did it do to change his stock?
I haven't talked to anyone who was like, wow, like he's flying up our boards, but I mean, if you would have asked me before, I would have said Zedrick Woods is probably not going to get drafted, and he'll probably get drafted now. You know, it'll be day three, I'm sure.
Yeah.
You know, he can't overcome the tape. I wish he was better on tape because I think he really competes, but he gives up way too much on tape. You just don't see those kind of traits. I mean,
their scheme was so bad.
The Jerry Jeudy play where they beat him down the field, yeah. And I was like, yeah, I mean. So, I mean, I think that with Zedrick Woods, you have some level of talent to work with at least, and special teams could be a path and being a back. I mean, you just can't pass up that kind of speed, like, especially knowing how underdeveloped so many other players were at Ole Miss. Like, maybe if you get them, you can develop them, you can work with them, you know, you can become something more. So, I mean, I guess the top 100 would still surprise me, but really anytime after that, when you run that kind of that fast in a bad safety class, you know, I think you can be come off the board a little higher than your tape indicates. So, I mean, he will compete. Like I said, I don't think there's any questions there. There just wasn't a lot of ball production in college. There wasn't a lot of splash plays. He was just kind of non-impactful his whole time there. So that'll be kind of the concern for NFL teams.
Last Ole Miss guy that I want to ask you about, one of my favorite guys that I covered, Ken Webster, suffered a it was a catastrophic at the time. It looked catastrophic knee injury when Ole Miss opened the, I guess, the 2017 season against Florida State. He missed eight. I'm getting my years mixed up. I guess he missed 18, came back in 19, or came back in 18 and played. I guess it was the open of the 2016 season. What is he ran a 4.4, looked good. He's played corner. He's played some safety. What's his NFL future?
Yeah, good question. I honestly, I'm going to have to go back to the tape. I didn't think he'd get invited to the combine. So I didn't know that he would get invited to the combine, to be honest. You know, I thought there was a chance, but I didn't really give him a long look going in because I didn't know whether he would be one of the guys there. And so this season I didn't think was great for him. I know there was some buzz about him early on in his time at Ole Miss. It really faded. That's happened with a couple guys who were there. Amon Marshall from USC is another one. So I don't know that there's a ton of interest right now, but you're right. He seemed to test pretty well. And I think that, you know, anytime that a guy can do that, they certainly help themselves a little bit in terms of putting themselves on the radar for NFL teams, especially because he's got some size to him and it just is not a very good cornerback class. You know, a lot of those guys who tested well don't really have great tape, and some of the guys with better tape didn't really test that well. So teams are going to be really reaching for guys with athletic profiles and, you know, the size and speed factors and hoping that they can develop them a little bit more. But I don't think there's any, you know, there's a lot of great production on tape. You know, again, go back to ball production, teams really care about that. I don't think that's an area where he's particularly shined during his career. So he needs development, I think, but at the same time, and I don't know that he always plays as athletic as he tested either. You know, you could say that about he and Zedrick Woods. But again, maybe part of that is that the defense didn't allow him to, and they didn't play with the confidence and the development that they will get in the NFL. So the landing spot will be big for a guy like him too. Probably a day three again, but in special teams will need to be a factor too. But he certainly helped himself in Indy, and I was glad to see that he got the invite.
So I'll be the first person to ask you about Kyler Murray. the Cardinals have the first pick in the draft. There's people that swear it's going to be Kyler Murray. There's others that say it's a smokescreen. He's only 5'10", a little over 5'10". What do you ultimately think, as we are a month and a half out or so, what do you think happens with Kyler Murray? Does he go number one? Does he slip in the draft? What's his stock? What's your kind of your gut feeling there?
I think the whole Kyler Murray situation is probably overblown a good bit. I don't think that there's this crazy rampant league-wide level of interest in Kyler Murray, but there'll be one or two teams for sure at the top, you know, in a weak quarterback class that will get excited about him. Jacksonville's probably, if you're asking me to bet, I would bet Jacksonville. I don't think Arizona's interested, but they are doing a great job of playing it up and making people buy in for sure. Which is exactly what they should be doing. You know, Jacksonville probably can't sit at 7 and get him, so maybe that's Arizona's plan. Maybe they try and get Jacksonville to move up, give up their whole draft, next year's draft. You know, for Jacksonville, they probably don't care. They feel like they have the team in place to win. They just need the quarterback. So, yeah, it's a smart play by Arizona to entice them. It's not a very well-kept secret that Jacksonville likes Kyler Murray. Everybody kind of knows that. Doug Marone didn't even hide it too much in his presser at the combine. He was talking about quarterbacks with mobility, they can buy an extra second, how important that is, and how he's learned that recently in his time in the league, and it was just Kyler Murray all over it. So I think that Jacksonville is pretty interested. I would guess that they would do something to find a way to land him because they're kind of looking like they're going to be SOL and quarterback situation right now, and really, who isn't? I mean, if you need one going into this offseason. So I think that's probably going to be the smartest move for them. and it would make sense for them and their offense with John DeFalco down there. He's worked well with athletic quarterbacks before. So if anybody's going to – I mean, I think Murray needs a lot of work. If anybody's going to get the most out of him, though, maybe a situation like that.
Do you like Haskins or Locke at all as an NFL quarterback? I mean, you talk about a weak class, and you're not the first person to say that in terms of the quarterbacks. Either one of those guys do anything to you know, strike your fancy?
I mean, I think Haskins can be a solid starter in the league. You know, I just there's not a really high ceiling there, I don't think. He just isn't a very aggressive quarterback. He's not a very aggressive passer. And when he does go down the field, there's all kinds of issues. You know, mechanics throw things off. He's not very accurate. So I just think he kind of limits what you can do. He's pretty good short to intermediate. I think, you know, he's not going to hurt you with turnovers and stuff like that. But he doesn't. He just doesn't make a lot of high degree of difficulty plays. So I would feel like I'm putting a real cap on my offense. But, again, for a team like Jacksonville or even the Giants, you know, schematically the fit makes sense. I just worry that their offenses don't offer enough, you know, dynamic ability to really be successful if their quarterbacks are those guys. So I think that, you know, he's all right. I think he could – I mean, he'll be a top 10 pick two, I'm sure. And I think that, you know, he can help a team for sure. He can. I mean, he's certainly will be one of the best 32 in the NFL. I don't know that he ever gets a team to a level where they're really, you know, highly competitive in terms of a quest for a championship. With Locke, I mean, I think he has ability. There's no question, but it's just hard for me with a guy that started 3.5 years in college. And I know the scheme changed his senior year, and he did get better a little bit over the second half of the season. But how good can he be? He doesn't really throw with anticipation that well. You know, there's a lot of things mentally for him that need to happen quicker, and he doesn't handle pressure well either. So I just think that kind of a profile doesn't typically lead to success in the NFL. You know, again, he can probably start and have some limited success depending on the factors around him. But at the end of the day, we check back in 4 or 5 years and we look at how these guys are. And I don't think you'll see, you know, I think Kyler Murray is the only one with a shot to be a real game changer in the NFL. And there are so many questions there that I would be terrified to take him high in the draft. I think, you know, Locke is probably going to be an up and down roller coaster ride, and Haskins will be kind of a steady, this is it, this is what you get type of guy, and there really isn't much more to it. So maybe I'm wrong and Haskins end up recognizing upside that I didn't see. It's always hard to judge a player fully like that when they've only started one season, but it's all I have to go off on, so I have to make a call at some point. I just didn't see that the type of passer that would really be kind of a big impact guy at the NFL level.
A lot of really talented defensive linemen in this draft. Bosa and Quinnen Williams, who I watched at Alabama, he's amazing. Josh Allen, I guess some people list him as a linebacker. I think he's more of a defensive lineman. Who am I leaving out? I mean, Montez Sweat, Ed Oliver, Rashawn Gary. It's a really talented defensive line class. Ultimately, do you think Arizona goes from that group at number one?
Yeah, I think Bose is the pick if they stay there. Yeah, I feel decent about that. I mean, they can always move down too, though. That's the thing. If you're Arizona, I think you should move down because you have so many needs in your team. I mean, you should be doing what you can to address multiple needs. So moving down, collecting other picks, I mean, that's the ideal scenario, which is another reason why playing up interest in Kyler Murray would make so much sense for them. So I do think that's in the cards for them. But if they stay there, yeah, I mean, Nick Bosa is the best player in the draft, in my opinion. They could definitely use him. You know, Quinnen Williams is a great player, too. Can't go wrong with that pick either. So, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of options to consider there if you're Arizona. But honestly, yeah, it's going to be a defensive line difference maker if you're asking me.
Last thing, a kid that I'm curious about, he played at Memphis, running back, Darrell Henderson. Had a great college career. I know he's not a first-round guy. Is he a top 100 guy?
Oh, yeah, I think so. Yeah. I mean, guy can catch the ball like that at the college level is going to be of interest to NFL teams. Speed and acceleration in the open field for sure. You know, is he going to be an every down back, you know, ball carrier type of guy? I don't think so, no. But I do think that there's a role for him in the NFL. It's a more valuable role now than it's probably ever been before. So I think, you know, depending on the offense and the fit, I do think a team will value him probably in the top 100.
I said last thing. This is a quick last thing. Literally, I promise last thing. Your opinion today, 6 weeks or so before the draft, how much trade activity is there in the first round, or do teams ultimately sort of stay pat?
Oh, man. Yeah, I think they'll be moving around. Teams will be moving around. You know, with Washington kind of settling in at what quarterback, they might not be. But Miami will move up, I bet. I mean, they have to address the position. They don't really have much choice. They'll probably move up. I could see Jacksonville moving up. You know, maybe not compared to most. I'm trying to think of other past years. You know, last year we had a couple of trades before the draft even happened with the Jets and with the Bills, and then the Bills again on draft weekend. So, yeah, there'll be some teams that move and shake around a little bit, but not maybe as many as you'd think in normal years because there just isn't that great of a need for quarterbacks, and there isn't that many good ones. But, you know, right now there aren't a lot of teams that need a quarterback, and that's just kind of the reality of how the league shaked out right now. We're in that limbo phase where we have a bunch of quarterbacks who really aren't good enough to be starters, but the teams aren't quite ready to admit it yet, and a bunch of young starters that are in the league and still some of the older guys hanging on too. So we're kind of in that no man's land a little bit at the court, and it's a good time for it too because it's not a great quarterback class. So yeah, I think there'll be some trades, but probably not a ton of blockbusters like we've seen in the past.
John, thanks so much for the time. I really enjoyed it. It's fascinating stuff. It was one hell of an indictment of the Ole Miss program the last couple of years, but it's something probably that people will be interested to hear. Thanks for the time.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, John. Thank you. Our thanks to John for his time tonight and this morning, today. We taped this on Thursday night. You're probably hearing it on Friday. We taped it on Thursday night. Our thanks to him for his time during a busy time getting ready for the NFL draft. The plan on the Beer Garden is to come back next week. Jeffrey Wright will join. We'll talk about a lot of sports topics, college basketball, the NBA, the NFL draft, Major League Baseball not that far away. So we'll talk about a lot of things on another edition of the Beer Garden presented by the Oxford Crystal. So Jeffrey Wright will join us next week. Our thanks to John Ledyard for his time again today. Until next week, take care.